This episode of Game On brought to you by Ford, featuring the EcoBoost engine with turbocharger and direct injection. Look for EcoBoost in the 2012 Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, and at Ford.com/technology.
And by Squarespace.com, fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. Make sure to use the offer code GAMEON3 to get 30% off your new account for the next 3 months. That's Game On and the number 3.
It's Sunday, March 4th, and I'm so happy about the new Assassin's Creed, I could fight myself! Veronica gets you your first look at Halo 4. Any look previously to this point would be impossible. Brian is hard as a black diamond for his review of SSX. The legendary Gary Whitta shambles into our lives to make a startling announcement about his future. Oh, I'm so worked up about the Revolutionary War. I just tossed a full box of tea into my bathtub.
Suck on that and like it, King George.
I say, it's time for Game On!
That intro was inappropriate.
What are you, a Tory? Some kind of British sympathizer? Hey guys, we are now on for Game On. I'm Brian Brushwood.
And I'm Veronica Belmont.
Dude, you have no idea how excited I am to have Gary Whitta on the show. When I was in college, I read PC Gamer magazine while he was editor-in-chief. I listened to the PC Gamer podcast and his podcast Game Theory before I even got into podcasting myself. And of course, I loved Book of Eli, which he wrote. Mm-hmm. This is going to be epic.
Yeah, you're getting a little fanboyish.
I am a little bit
excited. Just a little bit. It's okay. You're allowed.
My tail's wagging very fast. Hey guys, just a reminder, we record live every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv. Be sure to tweet reactions to us at @TwitGameOn on the tweeters. Just consider it a down payment on Chad talking at the end of the show. Tweet now or you will never see him again. Alive.
Oh, no. Also, when we're done, it's time for Shut Up and Play. It's our LAN party where the staff of Game On plays the crap out of a game with a crap ton of you, the live viewers. It's a crap load of fun. This week, we're playing Call of Duty 2, and also sometimes things like this happen. In your face, you
get oh! Yes!
Yeah. Oh, the chicken dance. There we go.
You know, a lesser co-host would make comparisons to Elaine's dance in Seinfeld, but I won't do that.
No, you would never do that to me.
No, I wouldn't.
So much confusion. Then I go into... What, that looks like the...
You are
clean. Wow, I'm rocking. Okay, so that happened. Yeah, crap.
That was awesome.
I lost the grudge match.
You won our hearts, however, that's for sure.
Needless to say, yes. And because you were too busy learning how to double dutch, here's a week's worth of news in our system update.
Remember last week when a Blizzard PR rep told Diablo 3 superfans that they shouldn't get excited and to think of the game like an M. Night Shyamalan movie? Well, the shocking surprise twist ending came early for 600 Blizzard employees as they were fired this week. Allegedly, the bulk of those axed are from customer service, which was found to be, quote, overstaffed, unquote. Surprise!
Nintendo's next-gen console looks like it's going to be sold for a song. Rumors have surfaced that the Wii U will retail for only $299, which is competitive to the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 at $250 and $200. But it will really be a pee-in-your-pants bargain when the next-gen consoles from Sony and Microsoft come out. In comparison, Sony's brand-new PS Vita retails for $250 as a portable console.
Give me liberty or I'll give you death with a tomahawk. Right in your f***ing face. That's what you'll be saying when you play Assassin's Creed 3. The threequel will take place during the American Revolution, with you playing as a new hero to the franchise, after Kotaku posted a leaked promotional image from a Best Buy employee showing a 1770s-era assassin. Ubisoft came clean and posted the official box art. Presale is set for March 5th. How you like them apples, Brits?
Looks like The SimCity is about to return to our lives in 2013. A Spanish translation from a German magazine revealed that Sim Maniacs can expect a new graphics engine, a beefed-up multiplayer cooperative mode, and even more complex relationships between vectors like population density, crime, and land value. The boner? Mastermind Will Wright has nothing to do with the project. Reticulating splines!
Have you seriously longed to party like it's 1999? Because we might have a way back to that bygone era. San Diego-based development and production company Super Fighter Team has announced they are releasing the first Super Nintendo title since 1998. It's called Nightmare Busters. They're looking to make 600 copies of it, and it will retail for $68. No word yet on what launch day DLC they'll make you buy, because they can't sell it to you because DLC wasn't invented yet. The 90s ruled.
All right, so there's a ton of news this week, so let's break it down. Starting off with Colonial Assassin's Creed. Are we cool with that?
I'm cool with it. I'm excited for it.
I think that's probably one of the most underserved. I can't think of another game that takes place in the Revolutionary War, and it's such a obviously important to American time period.
Yeah, it's going to be weird, though. I mean, we've done the Venice, the Rome, the Italian area for so long in Assassin's Creed, Europe. It's going to be a little bit weird taking it overseas into colonial America, but I think it's going to be pretty awesome, too. I'm ready for a change of scenery.
Well, and I think thematically it works well as well, because you've got, of course, the Americans largely won because of their guerrilla warfare tactics, and to have an assassin running around killing the Britos, sorry, British people, I think that'd be good. All right, second of all, Sim City without Will Wright. Oh, good, bad, or ugly?
I'm so excited for Sim City.
I don't even care.
Like, I have been waiting for this for so long. Sim City was one of my favorite games of all time. I played every iteration of that IP. The thing about, you know, not having Will Wright on this project is a little bit, you know, of a concern, but I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. I mean, I don't really know what else to say to that. We haven't seen a lot of the game yet. We don't really know much about it yet. So I think it's going to take us actually getting some hands-on time to see what is really different, if it is lacking his special touch or not.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, personally, I mean, I think obviously it was Will Wright's genius that brought us the game mechanic, the core game mechanic that we love so much. I think the refinement, you know, whatever it's going to stray from his vision, I think, will be offset by the fact that, you know, we'll get something new. I just want more SimCity.
Oh, my gosh, I can't wait.
And then lastly, would you seriously pay $68 for a Super Nintendo game?
Like, now?
Today. Right,
like,
now.
Like a new game?
Yes.
Is it on an emulator, or is it something I can actually play?
It's an actual cartridge that you're going to play on an actual Super Nintendo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would?
Maybe. Like, it depends on how cool it was.
And that's the thing, is I wonder, there has to be some amount of gimmickry. There's got to be some kind of P.T. Barnum aspect to this, where they're trying, you know, it's very novel, but $70 novel? More expensive than a AAA title novel? I don't know.
It's pretty insane. But, I mean, maybe they just should have done a Kickstarter to fund it and make it less expensive.
That's fair enough. One other thing that we didn't get to talk to about this week, Super Mario with Portals came out as well. I haven't played it yet, but watched the video of it. It looks phenomenal. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, Chad was playing it too
fun
earlier.
Fun fact, also, I used to play so much SSX back in the day that my nickname was Snow Bunny Bride.
Aww.
It was my return to the mountain just as sweet. SSB breaks it down for you in the score. All right, so full disclosure here. I played the original SSX a hell of a lot on the PS2. I started to play Tricky, but I got frustrated by the fact that I was playing Tricky on an Xbox, and the control scheme was just different enough that I was like, screw it, and I never really got into it. But you played
Tricky,
a lot of Tricky.
Tricky was my personal favorite.
Yeah,
and a
lot of people like that, and in fact, I know other people were saying that SSX 3 was their favorite. Mm-hmm. I will say that it was a real challenge for me on the latest version to learn the new control scheme on the new SSX, but I stuck with it, and I'm so glad I did.
Well, I thought you could go back to the classic version if you wanted to.
You can, but by all accounts, I heard from other friends of mine say, stick with it, it's totally worth it, you're going to dig it a lot more. And it's very intuitive, and it just feels right. You feel like you're doing everything exactly right. They also added more character backstory, and all the character backstories are super one-dimensional. You got these brief comics giving you like 8 lines about someone's backstory. And at first I was rolling my eyes, but then eventually it really mattered. I liked the fact that I got just a taste of a real character behind each of the players, and I loved the addition of a bad guy, of Griff, this jerk who defected from the team, and now you got to take him out. That made everything a little bit more satisfying, and I loved the music from the first SSX. I still will put in the original SSX soundtrack, the Slave Order theme that I believe Mixmaster Mike had something to do with. I don't know if it's because all the music is new to me right now, or if it's all just licensed crap and it's not the same, because it was original music back in the day. Mm-hmm. So the music hasn't grown on me the way I wanted it to. But I will say this, and it was very, for talking to one of my heroes, Gary Whitta, I hated that I was disagreeing with him, because Gary did not like the Deadly Descents. I loved it. Gary's point was that he felt like you shouldn't be thinking about surviving in an SSX game. That's not what SSX is.
Does it take
is.
Some of the cartoony fun out of it when you're actually worried about your own demise?
It did, but it brings a very novel mechanic to it. All of a sudden, you could play. It was a third way to play, because when you're playing for race, you're thinking speed, speed, speed. When you're playing for tricks, you're thinking trick, trick, trick. But like playing for survival was something I've never experienced in an SSX game before, and it caused me to, you know, like go slow on certain things. And some of them are better than others. I hate the tree ones and the rock ones, because that's just a pain in the butt. You just run into a bunch of obstacles. But I loved some of the more novel ones are in Antarctica. It's so cold that you can only spend a limited amount of time in the shade before you freeze.
And there's one too where if you get too high, you lose oxygen.
Yes.
You can't breathe.
Yes,
I thought
exactly.
That was pretty cool.
Well, and I'll tell you, but the two that are the most satisfying, I think the wingsuit one was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, the avalanche one, you play completely at a reverse camera angle as if you're seeing it from the helicopter, and as you go, you'll kick up the occasional avalanche that you have to boost out of. I enjoyed all of that, so I'm going to say, you know, thumbs up across the board on all that. The one other thing I would have liked to have seen, I understand you could buy gear to increase, you know, the power and speed of your board and your armor and all that stuff, but the problem is in the core game, unlocking going through the 9 peaks, there's never a reason to do that. I was able to unlock, I'm on the very last peak right now, and I've never had to buy a single bit of equipment. I'm sitting on a million of whatever their crazy currency is right now.
So does that help more when you get to the multiplayer?
Yes, I assume so, but the problem is I'm not going to play it multiplayer. This is going to be a single player experience for me, and they've taken away bits of the multiplayer as well. You can't play split screen side by side, and we were talking earlier that some people had to buy 2 copies of the game in order to play it side by side on a LAN. This is a tremendous oversight, and even if you're not going to let them go side by side, at least let player one and player two do side by side time trials with each other is what I'd like to see.
But yeah. I know our friend Anthony Carboni was also complaining a bit about the multiplayer to me the other day.
Right.
So I think that's something that is kind of standing out to a lot of players in a big way. But what did you think about the terrain? Because I know that they actually used like NASA footage of actual mountains to map everything out. It's like real world like stuff going. I don't know how to describe it even.
I would never have believed that for a
really?
Second. In fact, that was the most novel thing to me is when you told me that, I'm like, these are cartoonish terrains. There's no way that these are based in reality.
They are in some way at least based in reality.
It feels very believable. It doesn't matter if it's realistic or not. You really get the feeling. It's a very worthy successor. If you enjoyed any of the previous incarnations of SSX, mm-hmm. I highly recommend you buy it. And it's one of those games, like, while you're playing it, you think, oh, this is all right. I'm having an okay time. But I kid you not, like, for the past 2 days, being out here in California, all I could think of is, like, man, I really wish I was playing SSX
You know me. I'm not a huge sports game person. Like, I don't play a lot of them. And SSX kind of borderlines as a sports game in a lot of ways, but it's probably my favorite of that kind of genre.
Sure.
I'm not really sure how you would even classify it, because it's
an action sports
It's
game.
An action sports game, yeah.
And kind of an outrageous sports game.
Well, with a little more of a fun twist to it.
Absolutely.
I just missed the Tokyo level from Tricky.
Yes.
That was like one of my favorite video game levels of all time.
Absolutely. Well, go out and get it. SSX is available right freaking now for only $59.99.
All right. Well, regular sports are for guys who pinch the butts of waitresses on the graveyard shift. Action sports rules. And in honor of SSX, we count down the top 5 in this week's Lead Sheet.
All right, rock stars, let's talk about the best action sports games in history. Start off with Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. Finally, all the experience of being someone who does nothing but skate around public areas all day, but without any of the misdemeanor drug possession arrests. Not only was this the breakout for the legendary Tony Hawk franchise, but it really was the perfect storm of unique physics engine, authentic mixtape ambience, and super fun challenges. Since constant timing and balance were the hallmarks of the game, replayability was also maxed out like the points on a 15-minute-long halfpipe ride. Also, like John Madden to football, Lee Trevino to fighting golf, and Bill Laimbeer to combat basketball, Hawk is one of the great celebrity title sports game endorsers of all time. Number 4, Excitebike. Did you ever really even think about dirt bike racing before this game? I mean, unless you're Kelly Leak from Bad News Bears, the answer is no. But an easy-to-learn, difficult-to-master control system and the emphasis on time trials really took this game to the next level. How exciting is Excitebike? Look at that crowd. The entire freaking arena is packed to see one mook ride around on a track to set a race time. What's more, they are so polite, you can even hear the engine on his pocket rocket. Not a peep. Everyone is stone-faced like they're waiting for a Supreme Court judgment while this random dude sets a personal best. That's how exciting. Number 3, 1080 Snowboarding. Before there was SSX, there was 1080. So much of this game was totally revolutionary at the time it was released on the N64. The sound design created whooshing sounds on the slopes. There was a tangible difference between hard and powdered snow. And the physics engine put a premium on landing your board in a way unseen prior to the release and taking full advantage of the console's super responsive controls. The N64 always did such an amazing job at representing fringe sports. But snowboarding was already cool. It was the hobby your older brother's rich friend was really into. They really outdid themselves with another title. Wave Race. Let's get one thing straight. Unless you're trying to outrun the Coast Guard in a Michael Bay movie, there is nothing cool about wave runners. Sure, they look fun enough on vacation, but then you have one too many strawberry daiquiris, you rent one from a beach carny, and 10 minutes into doing laps around the ocean, you realize it's boring, nauseous, and awful. Which is why Wave Race rules. All the fun of Mario Kart, including the speed and jumping objectives, in a groundbreaking representation of water. It made this a must-have title when it dropped in 1996. Also, every wave was essentially a ramp, creating endless opportunities for awesome showboating. Number 1, Skitchin. For some reason, rollerblades took the concept of skating out of the rinks and into the streets. Forget couple skates and the chicken dance, now we could roam the cities like feral dogs. It also became oddly anti-authoritarian, which is what makes the hilarious premise of Skitchin awesome. The gameplay, using the Road Rash engine, asked you to race to a destination by holding on to cars. You had to be careful not to wear out the wheels on your blades, and tricks along the way earned you cash to upgrade your equipment. The best part? You also had to punch other skaters, so they lost their grip on the cars you're temporarily sharing, and so they lay prostrate on the asphalt, waiting to get run the f*** over by oncoming traffic. It even stirred up a little controversy, forcing the creators at Electronic Arts to put a warning on the front of the game which cautions impressionable gamers not to attempt what they're about to play. The best part? You could skip that screen by tapping out BA down A start start. Yep, you could zip right through that nonsense by entering what the game truly is. Bad ass.
So the question is, do we totally humiliate ourselves on the list? Well, the joke is on you, suckers, because we got all these from our Reddit, which you can find at twitgameon.reddit.com. You can blame Canadian Ben, Trivia Travis, Matt3, and EOT to the H. Hang out there so your voice can be heard for next week's list.
Yeah, they're already mad about not having Skate or Die on the list.
Skate or Die, and also I saw some people upset about Jet Set Radio Future, which between the two, I would say Skate or Die. I wish we could have put it on there, but the badass for Skitchin, the fact
so
that you can
cool.
pass it.
Yeah, chat room was super excited about Skitchin. Like, the second Skitchin came on, everyone was like, Skitchin!
Yes,
yeah!
We win!
All right, so hey, we got a super early first look at some of Microsoft's biggest releases of 2012 this week, including Halo 4 and the new Fable. But enough of my malarkey, let's see the goods.
Microsoft is kicking off the week before GDC by showing off some of their latest and greatest titles, including Mass Effect 3, Halo 4, Steel Battalion, Heavy Armor, and one of my personal favorites, Fable the Journey. We also had a chance to chat with Microsoft Major Nelson about some of the games he's excited for. So Larry, what are we seeing here at the Spring Showcase?
Veronica, we got some great stuff we're showing off. We're showing, of course, great Kinect games. We have first time we're showing hands-on with Steel Battalion. I saw you playing with that a little bit earlier. Some brand new Tiger Woods. You can see Tiger Woods with great Kinect integration. Some other Kinect games as well, including Kinect Star Wars. Excited about that. And we're showing off some brand new arcade titles. Some great arcade titles will be coming to Xbox Arcade in the coming year.
What are you most excited about, personally?
Wow. Well, of course, probably what's happening right behind us a few feet away is Halo 4. It's the first time we've shown real live footage of Halo 4.
And how is that going with the new development house, with the changeover from Bungie to 343?
343 is doing a great job. They now own the mantle of Halo moving forward, and they've done a great job of shepherding that franchise and really getting it prepared for the next generation in terms of what it's going to be in the next sequence of events in the Halo universe.
You guys are super focused on Kinect this time around. I mean, that's obviously something that you're putting a lot of your attention to. Is there going to be a time when we're not using the, you know, controller Prime anymore and we're using Kinect all the way through, or is there always going to be a place for a proper controller?
You know, I talked to a lot of developers about this, and they want to do the right thing for the game. We see some great adaptions of Kinect in games like, for instance, Mass Effect, which just came out, where you've got voice and controllers working together. And I think BioWare did a fantastic job there. So I think there's always going to be room for controller. But for those that are intimidated by this thing with all the buttons, like a lot of people are, then Kinect is going to be there to save the day.
we also got a look at Halo 4, which is something that I know a lot of you guys are excited about. We saw the new Spartan 4s that you'll be using in your multiplayer. They've got an all nice new svelte armor going on. They've really amped up the armor, not just for the Spartans, but also for Master Chief. They're going to really do a deep dive into his backstory, learn what his motivation is, why he is the way he is, and also look at some of his, you know, interpersonal relationships that are happening. In terms of the multiplayer gameplay modes, we have some new things to look forward to, including something called Warehouse, which is really cool. It takes place on this big gas giant, and you're going around this warehouse. So that's going to be really fun for people. Also, a level called Wraparound, which is this big solar facility that's absolutely gorgeous. So they really want to redefine the multiplayer in Halo 4, make it something completely new that's still recognizable, though, for fans of the game.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what I saw at the showcase.
Do tell.
It was super fun, first of all. I had a really great time.
That's awesome.
The games, I really enjoyed playing a lot of the games. Halo 4, of course, was one of the ones that we were really, really excited to see. As Major Nelson said, it was the first time we were seeing actual gameplay from Halo 4. So we saw the multiplayer levels, a few of them at least. We saw the new Spartan 4 armor, which was very cool. And of course, learned a lot about, we didn't learn a lot about, but we know that we're going to learn a lot about Master Chief's backstory and a bit of what drives him. And there's like this huge threat that is you know, coming over the world and the universe. And in a way, it kind of made me think about Mass Effect 3 in a lot of ways. The same kind of, I got kind of a vibe that there's a lot at stake, like even more at stake than there has been in the past.
Sure, sure.
So it made me want to get into that campaign mode and just really see what's going on in the world of Halo 4.
All right, but the important thing is I heard that there is a sequel to Steel Battalion that you actually got hands off, I guess, hands on. What do you call it with Kinect?
All right, so it's both Kinect. As I mentioned, it's both Kinect and controller at the same time. And it was a little kludgy kind of moving between those two ways of managing the interface. But overall, it looks like a really great game. It was a lot of fun to play. You're still in that same giant mech that you would expect from before. I love the world. I love seeing like being in this future world, but having that older technology was very cool.
I liked the fact that, from what little I saw, that the aesthetic, like, they sort of take it to heart. Not only does the mechanic have to be more, you know, kludgy World War II era, mm-hmm. but they also give nods to it in the fashions of what they're wearing.
Yeah.
The clothes look more like World War II. And what's amazing to me is that Steel Battalion 1 was novel because of its incredibly rich, detailed control system. Yeah, mm-hmm. that incredibly gigantic, cartoonish, you know, mech control system. But this is, in a weird way, a rejection of all that for an equally novel, but in a totally different way, control scheme. Like, how well did the Kinect controls work for it? Did you feel like you were really in charge, or were you just waving your arms around feeling silly?
There was some of that, but I just don't feel like I do a very good job with Kinect for some reason. I haven't unlocked the secret yet of how to really be good at it.
You're not speaking the same language?
Apparently not. I haven't quite figured it out, but there was some cool stuff. You know, you can hold up binoculars, you can fist bump your teammates. There were some very cool controls that you could do with the Kinect, and I was seeing people doing it much better than I was doing it, mm-hmm. where it seemed very natural. The flow was all there. It looked very comfortable. It looked very realistic, and the game gives you very good cues about when to do those kind of motions. The tutorial was very, very thorough, so I felt like I understood what I was supposed to do. It was just making it actually work for me that gave me a little bit of a hard time, and that's coming out on June 19th in the U.S., and I think a couple days later in Europe. And I'm looking forward to it. It was one of the big hits of the showcase, I would say, from all the journalists that I talked to.
I guess one of the surprise hits, too. I mean,
yeah.
Everyone's going to go excited for Halo 4. What else did you see?
Fable the Journey. Okay, so Chad and I had a little bit of a fangirl and boy moment because we walked into the demo room and Peter Molyneux was there.
Oh, my God.
To give, but anyway, I'm a games journalist. I shouldn't be that fangirl.
Yeah, no, I'm objective.
I'm objective.
You stuff that, forget about
but
it.
But I was excited.
Sure.
I love the Fable games. And Black and White and Black and White 2 were some of my favorite games growing up. And so those were just, to be able to be in the same room and actually like talk to him about that kind of stuff was cool. And they were like, oh, does anyone want to demo the game? And I was like, so I sat in front of all the other journos in the room and tried the game out. I got to drive the horse cart. So you have a horse, as I mentioned, and it's kind of like that
dog
relationship.
You're doing this. Is there Kinect elements to it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's Kinect. And
so, do you like that?
it was cool because you're casting spells. You can dual cast with both hands, too. Like, use one for fireballs or shoot, like, energy balls at bad guys. And then you can use the other one as almost like a whip-like device to grab guys from far away and fling them in the air and then shoot fireballs at them. Then you can combine them together into one super powerful spell.
That's cool.
Yeah, and if your horse gets hit with arrows, you actually have to, like, wedge them out and pull it out of the horse's body, and that's
visceral.
I hate using that word, but that's exactly what it is. It's one of the most overused words in the gaming, like, description.
Yeah, sure.
Scenario, I guess. But driving the carriage, you know, once you figured out how to really get the reins going, I got the hang of that after a while.
Right.
And the horse interactions are really cool. You can brush him and pet his fur, and it just looks, or hair. I guess horses have hair, not fur.
And like, it looks real. Is that just for grins, or does it serve a purpose in the game?
Yeah, because you can heal. You can heal your horse if it's been damaged.
With love.
With your love spells. So I'm super excited about that. I love Fable. I love that world. It takes place several years after the last Fable game. The only thing, I almost asked him, I hit a bug in Fable 3 where my husband and children just disappeared at the end of the game, and like they had died in some catastrophe, but it still showed them on the map, so every time I went back to my house, they were like, oh, they're in the house, but they were never actually there. And I was like,
maybe that's a feature, right?
Maybe it's meant
to twist with
you. Oh, it was like a game maddening bug, not even a game breaking bug, just like a really... I was very upset, but I didn't lash out at him about that. It was okay.
Well, that's very
I internalized. And then finally, we took a look at Star Wars for Kinect, which
Star
was
Star Wars Kinect. You know, my brother worked on the game, and I've not seen anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, he spent like 8 months working there.
Yeah, so there's several different modes. You can do Jedi mode. There's pod racing. You can do a dancing mode. Like, it's kind of like a Dance Central, but more Star Wars themed.
You're a Twi'lek and dancing around or whatever.
And then there's the Rancor Rampage.
Wait, you get to be a Rancor?
Yeah.
All right, that's cool.
And you literally just rampage throughout the whole thing.
Did you not say a lightsaber thing?
No, in the Jedi mode.
Oh, Jedi mode.
Yeah,
okay,
in Jedi mode, you're a Jedi, and so you have a lightsaber, and you do things like you go into almost a skiing action to zoom forward. You're on a specific path. You can't, because it's Kinect, so you're not like walking to your next location. It kind of moves you through the levels a little bit. But all the attacks were very cool. You know, it felt like a true Star Wars game, which of course it is. And the pod racing was probably my favorite one that I saw.
Wow, because what a surprise. That's
it feels cool. Like a full racing kind of game.
So if you were going to pick one of your favorite, the item of show, what would it be?
The item of show, I would say from what I was hearing of the chatter, was probably Steel Battalion.
Yeah.
I think people are very excited about Halo 4, too. I think 343 did a great job taking over the IP. It looks phenomenal, and I'm excited to see what they do with it. But I think Steel Battalion was kind of the surprise hit of the show.
Yeah, no, it's totally novel. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know whether to cry or wind my watch, but the show's already half over. But we have so much more yet to come. Please, trust me. You're my only hope. Gary Whitta joins us in studio to discuss a huge new gig that ties in with a very popular show involving murderous ghouls. It's not Teen Mom. I just asked. Just wait for the 5 freaking seconds and he'll tell you, and old video game songs. We all remember them. That's a good premise for a sketch. But first, we can't pay for stuff without the money that people pay us to say nice things about their stuff. So, hey, look, here are some of those things right now.
This episode of Game On brought to you by Ford featuring EcoBoost. EcoBoost is the engine technology from Ford that delivers the power of a larger engine in a smaller one. We're talking about Ford redesigning the conventional engine to meet fuel efficiency standards. They created EcoBoost engine technology by reducing the number of cylinders to improve efficiency and compensating for the loss of horsepower and torque through a combination of technologies including direct injection and turbocharging. Here's how it works. EcoBoost combines two technologies, direct injection and turbocharging. Direct injection produces a cooler, denser charge that generates more power per drop of fuel, while the two small engine-cooled turbochargers spool up more quickly than a single large turbo. Energy from the engine's exhaust, which would otherwise be wasted, rotates the turbine wheels. Each turbine was coupled to a compressor that pressurizes incoming air, significantly increasing output per liter. You experience instantaneous low-end torque responsiveness with virtually no turbo lag. Look for the 2.0-liter EcoBoost engine on the 2012 Explorer and Edge. The 2013 Escape, coming spring 2012, will offer 1.6-liter and 2.0-liter EcoBoost options. You can learn more about this and other technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology.
All right, well, tonight's guest has done pretty much every freaking thing on Earth that I can imagine that is also awesome. He was the editor-in-chief of PC Gamer magazine. You wrote the screenplay for Book of Eli, the Book of Eli, rather. You've done, you've been a podcaster for years and years, podcasting pioneer, if you will. Yes, so thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Gary Whitta.
I'm now quite intimidated by myself.
You're sitting there thinking like, man, I am a badass.
Like, yeah, this is not going to be good for my ego at all.
Also our first in-studio guest, which is very exciting.
That's right. I'm very, very happy to help you break this set. This is very cool. It's like a,
thank you.
Like a real talk show. I love it.
Right so on. Tell us. This is how we talk on Real Talk.
Who's the musical
shows.
Guest?
Oh, that's going to happen later. We have one planned for a few episodes from now.
I'll look forward to it.
So you've made some pretty exciting announcements in recent weeks. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, not so much me directly, but Telltale Games, which is developing the video game version of The Walking Dead. It's been known that they're doing a game version for quite some time. But just recently, a couple of weeks ago, they finally kind of took the wraps off it for the first time and released a bunch of screens and a bunch of information about how they're approaching the game. And one of the things that they announced is that I'm working with them, helping them on the story side of the game, which is really all of it, because it's a very story-driven game. So that's pretty exciting. I'm the story consultant on the game across all five episodes and writing one of the episodes as well. So it's pretty cool.
And so how closely are they going to follow the storyline of the TV show?
Of the TV show, not at all, because it's actually not related to the TV show at all. Everything, of course, stems from the comics, which is the original version of The Walking Dead. So AMC licensed the comics to go make a TV show, and now Telltale came along and they licensed the comics to go make a video game. And so the game is based on the comics. It has no association with the TV show at all, and much in the same way that the TV show has kind of taken the original story and kind of started to deviate and put their own spin on it, what Telltale is doing is actually even more of a radical departure than that, because they're not following the story of the comics at all. There's no Rick.
Oh, wow.
They're basically, it's set in the same universe, it's canon, it's the same timeline, but it's another group of survivors, it's another set of central characters that just happen to be trying to survive in the same universe as Rick and Shane and all those other guys. There's a little bit of crossover. Glenn is in the first episode of the game. Herschel's farm shows up at some point in the game. So the characters do kind of overlap and intersect, and you'll see some of the DNA of the original comics is definitely in there, but it's very much its own original story.
From a storytelling perspective, is that like a breath of fresh air to have this blank canvas in a world that you're already familiar with and the type of situations that you know you're going to deal with, but you can go whatever direction you want?
Yeah, in a way, it's exactly what you said, because I think, for example, the guys that are doing the TV show, they've taken the choice to kind of adapt the comics somewhat literally, but they you know, their challenge is how much can we go off the beaten path here? Are we going to annoy fans of the comic if we do something? That wasn't the way it wasn't in the comics. Whereas what Telltale is doing is to say, we're not doing that story at all. Because how many times can you revisit the same story? It's cool to see a TV version of the comic book story, but if you're going to go there again to that universe, let's see a whole other side of that world. Obviously, there are all kinds of other groups trying to survive that situation, and so we have a whole original new set of characters that we've created just for that new story.
I would imagine that also gives you the advantage of being able to call back the exact same people who are fans of the comic books and fans of the television show to where they're not going to be hearing the same story again, but something entirely new.
Yeah, and it broadens the universe. I mean, all the rules are the same, you know, the lore, the mythology is the same. It's set in and around Atlanta. It's the same time and place in that fictional universe. And like I said, there are a couple of characters and there are a couple of little Easter eggs. We would go, oh, that was in the comics. But for the most part, like, so our lead character, for example, is a guy called Lee, who is a convicted murderer. And he's actually on his way to jail when the apocalypse happens. And as a result, he gets free. So he's a very different story. Kind of, I think they deliberately chose to make that character on the opposite side of the law from Rick. Rick's a cop, right? So Lee is a guy on the other side of the law. And so they said, what can we do that is completely the opposite side of the story you've seen already? And like you said, we're treating it very much as an original story, still very faithful to the lore and the mythology that Robert Kirkman created. We ask ourselves all the time, like, would Robert approve of that? Is that consistent tonally with the universe? Does it feel like it feels like it belongs in the Walking Dead world that's been established? But we don't have to worry about existing storylines or characters because they're all original.
Was there any kind of collaboration between you and the writers of the comic as well?
So Robert's very closely involved. You know, he signs off on everything. I think he visited Telltale recently to kind of look at the game and seems to be very happy with what we're doing. And, you know, when I first sat down with the Telltale guys, you know, we kind of decided that we had two ambitions. One was for Robert and the guys that work on the TV show to look at what we did and go, oh, we should have thought of that. Why didn't we do that? That's so cool.
Rubbing in a little.
And also to go, oh, man, can they do that? That is disgusting. Because we really kind of, I think more than the comics, even more than the TV show, I think there's some stuff in there that is really going to turn your stomach, both in terms of the zombie gore and also in terms of the agonizing decisions that some of the characters are going to have to make. Because you remember, it's a game now. You're not watching someone else making that decision. You are the player who has to make that agonizing decision. And there are no easy choices in the Walking Dead universe. I mean, they're all really horrible choices.
That is horrific. Yeah. Because you're right. I mean, I read the comic book and I'm just twisting looking at the decisions they have to make. I don't want to be the guy who has to make those decisions.
Yeah, for me as a writer, it's actually really satisfying. I think it's one of the benefits of working in the interactive medium is as a writer, when I write a movie or a TV show, it's fun to take fictional characters that you create and torture them and put them in horrible, agonizing situations. When you do a video game story, that's real people that you're torturing. You're putting them in those situations.
So does that make it better or worse?
It's more fun for me, which is all I care about.
So now that you're in the trenches with this all the time, I'm sure, why do you think zombies make such compelling storytelling devices these days? Why is it such a trend right now?
An enduring trend, too.
Yeah.
I think end-of-the-world stories have always been popular. I mean, I obviously kind of made my little contribution to that with the Book of Eli, and this is a different kind of end of the world. Zombies in particular have been, like I said, just like vampires, every kind of genre trend has its day in the sun. Zombies were really popular for a long time, then they went away. No one was interested in zombies. Now they're really back again. To the point at which I kind of feel there's almost a bit of zombie fatigue that's starting to step in. It's like, if it's not zombies, it's unicorns. Like, the internet is filled with these things. But I think that there are a couple of
They're to balance each other out, the zombies and the unicorns.
I know.
Maybe the zombie unicorns. Fight each other
and have a battle royale and decide it once and for all. But I think there's two parts of the zombie kind of mythology that are immune from that. There's a lot of Johnny-come-latelys in the zombie universe these days. Everyone has a zombie story to tell. But the original George A. Romero zombie movies and the Walking Dead universe that Robert created, I think, are kind of grandfathered in a long time prior to that. They were doing that stuff before it was really cool. In fact, they made it cool. I think The Walking Dead is one of the reasons why zombie stuff is cool again. So I think The Walking Dead is actually one of the reasons why zombies are so popular right now. So it's for me, it's a real thrill to you know, be able to contribute a little something to that universe.
So having already been the editor of PC Gamer, do you have an extreme pressure to make sure that this game is good? Do you feel like there's extra scrutiny with the fact that you have a background as a reviewer?
Not just with this game, but with everything I do. It's very weird for me to have been in a situation where I've been on both sides of the fence. For many years, got my paycheck criticizing the work of others. I would sit in my chair at PC Gamer and go, oh, this game is terrible. And it never really occurred to me that there were people that worked really hard on that game. These feelings I might be hurting really badly. And so when I made a movie and it came out and it got reviews, and it got a lot of very good reviews, it also got a lot of very bad reviews. It was very polarizing. It was kind of a movie that you either love or hate. And to be on the other side of the fence, you finally empathize with people who create content and put it out in the world. You know, you're very vulnerable when you do that, and people to see a review, people, someone says this is great, that's very gratifying, but when somebody says it's terrible, yeah, it really stings. And so I'm very aware of that, and I'm sure, you know, I'll be very conscious of what people think of with The Walking Dead when it comes out. And the weird thing about The Walking Dead is the way that Telltale make games, they're episodic. They will be continuing to make and develop episodes of the game after the first episode is out. And so they'll be looking at the criticism, how the story is, just like you would do with a TV show or a comic book. It's an ongoing story. So you look at how people are reacting to what you've already done, and that may shape what you continue to do in the future.
Speaking of which, how is it different writing for a video game versus a screenplay or a film?
It's a lot more work, I've noticed. I mean, it really is. And anyone who's played a story-driven game, you don't have to work in the business to appreciate this. You watch a movie, it's 2 hours long. It's usually one page is a minute of screen time. So a two-hour movie is a 120-page script. That's what you write. That has its own challenges, but it's one linear story that you tell from beginning to end. When you write a video game, they sent me the first episode of the Walking Dead scripts to look at. It was 500 pages long.
Holy God.
Because it's not just one story. It's every single branch of the story that you can go down, every single choice, every decision that you make has to be played out in dialogue and in various scenarios. And so it's much more meticulous. All the moving parts have to kind of interlock. And just by volume, you're writing a lot more stuff. Mm-hmm. So I actually think it's a lot more difficult.
Now, something we were talking about a little bit before this show, I know that Walking Dead has a counterpart, which is The Talking Dead, and now the game is going to have another counterpart called Playing Dead.
It's actually pretty cool. So what Telltale is doing is they're kind of taking a little bit of a cue from AMC. So AMC now, once you watch an episode of The Walking Dead, they have Talking Dead with, is it Chris?
Chris Hardwick,
right? The Nerdist, who comes on and hosts the show and they talk about the episode. So what Telltale did is kind of took that format, but they're using it a little bit differently. They created a series called Playing Dead, and if you go to telltalegames.com, you can. The first episode is already up, and it's the same thing. It's kind of a talk show format, just like this. They have a host, and they have the developers of the game come in and talk about what players can expect from the game. So the first episode is up right now on their site. I'm in the second episode, which I think debuts tomorrow, on Monday. So you'll be able to go to telltalegames.com and see that, and we talk about what our ambitions are, how we tell the story of the game. And I think the episode is me and Sean Vanaman, who's one of the developers of the game, and also one of the guys, if you remember the Idle Thumbs podcast, he's one of those guys. And I think Idle Thumbs is actually coming back as well. They did a Kickstarter and they're bringing that podcast back,
which is very cool.
So it's funny how all these different worlds intersect, but if you want to know a lot more, I mean, like a lot more about what the Walking Dead game is going to be, you can go to Telltale's website and check out those YouTube videos. Robert Kirkman himself is in the episode after me talking about how he's contributing to the game as well. So that's pretty cool.
So can you spill the beans on anything else you're working on? I know you're doing something with M. Night Shyamalan now.
There's very little I can tell you about it other than what is already in the public domain. It's called After Earth. I worked on it as a screenwriter. M. Night Shyamalan is directing it. Will Smith and his son Jaden are in it. They're the stars. And it's shooting right now. They just got done in Costa Rica and they've got a few more months to go. And it's coming out, I think, June next year. It's a big summer movie, so that's very exciting. And do not ask me anything else because I am not allowed to say anything other than that.
maybe after we give you a couple of beers already, later. He's already said too much, ladies and gentlemen. So where can people follow you online?
At Gary Witter. I think it's up on the screen somewhere because my name is spelled weirdly, but if you see it on the screen right there it is. And I'm all over the internet. If you do a Google search for me, the weird thing, when you have a name that there's, you know, it's like if you're John Smith, it can be hard to hunt people down on the internet, but if you Google me, like it's right there. I kind of
GARYWHITTA for the audio listeners.
I cannot escape my online footprint. I'm on Google Plus and Facebook
you are.
And all those
Google
places.
Plus.
But Twitter is like my main thing where I kind of tell people, there you go, look, there's a bunch of Twitter.
You let me know that you surpassed me on Google Plus.
Well, I think
today.
You and I may actually have a little bit of a rivalry.
A little rivalry going on.
So when you join Google, if you sign up for Google Plus. God knows why you would, but if you were,
I like the Google Plus.
Veronica and I are actually there as like people you may be interested in following from different areas of tech and whatever. And she and I both have almost exactly the same number of followers right now. So this, because I'm a very petty individual, this has become a point of pride with me that I must have more followers than Veronica.
I certainly don't know
because
what you're talking about.
Because she's obliterating me on Twitter. I mean, it's not even close. So Google Plus is like where I have to make my stand.
I most certainly
don't go to CircleCount.com every day to look at my standing.
Oh, geez, you guys. I didn't even know this until... This is one of those times where I was actually like, oh, I have a lot of followers on this thing. Where did this happen?
No, I've got it bad.
That's bad.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here in studio today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's very cool.
We would love to have you back on again sometime,
anytime.
Especially when the game comes out.
Absolutely.
Walk us through it.
Back and talk about it. Absolutely.
All right. Well, before we move forward, it's time to thank some of our corporate sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. Squarespace.com has an easy-to-use UI for creating and managing a website or blog. Plus, it's optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. They recently created a developer-friendly CSS editor that allows you to pop out the entire window in full screen, colorize code, undo, find, and replace. There are hundreds of design templates to choose from, and you can customize any of the designs to fit your needs. They recently added 13 new templates. Template redesigns with 85 new style options and 2 brand new templates. There's tons of online resources and a special support team to give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com and sign up for a free account. Make sure to use the offer code GAMEON3 to get 30% off your new account for the next 3 months. That's GAMEON and the number 3.
All right, this may seem really weird, but we have to take one more break to thank one more sponsor. This is a record-breaking third sponsor. I really apologize, but these guys are awesome. You should really consider their product.
Hey, Bri, what's up?
Oh, nothing. I was just thinking about how much I love some of the songs from old video games, but it's such a hassle to drag out all my old consoles just so I can listen to them. That's why I bought the new album with all my favorite video game songs called Video Game Classics.
Me too. Even though they have no legal rights from the game publishers to play any of the music or reference any of the characters or franchises by name in the commercials, that didn't stop me from enjoying songs like do-do-do-do-do-do, do 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 do.
Wow, that brings back memories. Memories so strong, I spent my own money to buy this album, trusting that all the songs are on there, even though the creators have been warned that drastic action would be taken should any trademark intellectual property be mentioned. I also love that Video Game Classics includes great songs like do 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 do, and a ton of other songs that cannot be specifically referred to thanks to a very specific, serious threat by those that legally own the copyright.
Oh, hold on a second. That's our friend Tom. I'll conference him in.
Hey, Tom. Are you listening to that awesome new collection of video game classics?
You know, I actually am. I love that it has the Metroid song on.
Tom? You there?
Hey, buddy.
If you'd like to order Video Game Classics, please have your credit card ready and call 1-800-555-0199. Actually, call 911. It's a trap. When you say the names, bad things happen. It's happened to everyone, and it'll happen to you. Don't invite it into your life. You won't survive. No one survives. Sorry, no CODs.
Man, it was about time we revealed how poor Tom Merritt died.
R.I.P., Tom.
Well, it's almost time for me and Brian to zip our traps so we can shut up and play. Here to tell us what's going to happen and how you can get involved is Glenn Rubenstein, the producer and host of that fine show.
Hey, by the way, have you guys checked out the Doghouse Systems yet? They make some of the most kick-assingest gaming machines that money can buy. How do we know? Because we get to play them every week during the LAN party, and they truly do kick-ass. So when you're ready to level up, use the code GAMEON at checkout, and they'll double your memory for free. Click on the banner ad on our Twitter homepage to learn more about the Double Your Memory promotion. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Hi, Glenn.
Hey there. How's it going, everybody? I'm Glenn Rubenstein, producer and co-host of Shut Up and Play, the TwitLand Party. Tonight, Sunday, March 4th, we are playing Call of Duty 2. No, not Modern Warfare 2. The original World War II first-person shooter. And, you know, if you're watching this on the podcast, it's too late already. You missed your chance. But next week, Sunday, March 11th, Minecraft. You all demanded it, and what can I say? You wore me down. We're doing Minecraft. We're doing building together. We're doing some PvP. It'll be awesome. But if for those that are tuning in that have no interest in Minecraft, don't worry about it. We're also going to have Rock Band going that night. Oh, so we'll make a nice little contrast going of the music, the jams. I'm sure Brushwood will bust out his fine vocal skills.
I've got no skills.
And Veronica
this
as well.
This guy over here.
Yes, it's going to be quite epic. Sunday, March 11th. Come on back for Shut Up and Play here on Twit. If you want to be involved in Minecraft, though, send an email, twitlandparty@gmail.com, to get all the information about the servers, and we'll see you next Sunday back here for Shut Up and Play.
Oh, you better believe that I'm going to be doing some Rock Band.
Rock Band.
I did some fine karaoke this weekend, I must say.
Did
so
you?
I'm getting the vocal cords all warmed
I'm
up.
I'm all about the guitar. I'm playing the five-starred on the hardest level, four-play long time. It
nice.
Was amazing.
Good for you. All right, well, you guys have been leaving some feedback, so let's allow Chad to talk on this fine episode and hear what you have to say. Chad, take it away.
Hey, thanks. So Kitsukan on Twitter says, Hydro Thunder and Road Rash for the leech sheet. He really wishes that those would have made it in.
I'll tell you, the leech sheet, we can never get completely right.
There's
always
going to
be something that's
going to
get
taken.
Yeah, take it up on the Reddit, twiggameon.reddit.com.
And then also Dan Cap, in response to the news, he says he will definitely be purchasing Assassin's Creed on the first day.
Yeah.
So stoked! stoked.
Dude, I'm stoked. America.
I'm behind. Yeah. I haven't started Revelations yet. It's sitting at home. It's on my Gamefly membership, and I have to play it. Brotherhood was awesome. I'm behind.
Guilt.
I need to catch up. Yes. Right. There's too many games to play. I know. It's such a...
It's not like you have a job hosting a video game review show.
Well, that's the problem. We talk about what games we're going to review, and so then we play those, and then all the other games that we're not immediately talking about or that have somehow fallen to the wayside, they get pushed off for a while, and then there's just not enough hours in the day.
I definitely am feeling that with Star Wars The Old Republic.
Yeah, sad. So little time. Chad, anything else we got?
Yeah, the very last thing is 29PC3 says, I don't think the internet can be so saturated, especially by something as awesome as zombies.
Yes.
So you enjoyed your zombie talk. Thanks a lot.
Are ninjas better than zombies?
Oh, that is an age-old question,
Ryan. Or
zombie
ninjas?
Zombie ninjas.
Zombie ninja pirates?
That can happen.
Zombie ninja pirate
robots? It's always pirates versus ninjas.
Yeah, zombies versus...
And then where do zombies fit in
robots?
To that whole thing? Robots? Okay. Anyhow, thanks to Microsoft and Major Nelson for the early access to Halo 4 and Fable. And, of course, a huge thanks to Gary Whitta for stopping by. Next week, the Minecraft Wizards of Mojang join us, and we'll be talking a metric crap ton of Mass Effect 3. We will see you guys then.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you.
Mars.
This is good.
It's a nice giant, though.
Well, Lydia, in order to get in there, I'm going to have to be stealthy, so I think we're going to have to part ways for a little bit. Might be able to find you some real armor for you and some real boots for me. After all, I'm only level 5, and I could really use a new pair of boots. So, why don't you just head home so I can be stealthy and get into a giant camp?
I'll be on my way.
All right, Lydia, well, I'll see you at home then. And, Lydia?
Lydia, you're so stupid.
Is that the subtext of this? Is this?
Oh, Lydia's the worst.
This is not going.
Oh, I thought you were getting all like feminist on it. You're all like, just because she's a girl, you're like, no, seriously, she's
no, she's the worst.
Now he's angry. Now he's angry, Lydia. Look what you've done. Are you happy with yourself? No, Lydia. No, don't try to fight. Oh God. Oh God. Oh, just Lydia. Lydia, where'd you go? Lydia. Oh, Lydia. Lydia. Oh, there you go. Oh, I'm coming. Don't worry. Lydia, no! Why did you have to do that?
I feel really bad because this video is so well done that it drove me crazy that she doesn't look at all like Lydia. Like, she's wearing a pea coat and, like, jeans.
But this makes up for it. This is great.
This whole thing is great.
Oh, Lydia! Oh, no! Oh, Lydia! Oh, this doesn't look good! Lydia!
It's the details, though, Brian.
Lydia,
it's the details.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. Oh, my God! You're alive? That was amazing! How did you do that?
I am your sword and your shield.
Yeah.
I am sworn to carry a burden.
She doesn't look anything like Lydia.
She's wearing jeans. Come on. It's like they just grabbed a girl off the street. It was like you. You're going to be Lydia now. Yeah. We need a girl.
You're a lady. You got lady bits. Now get over
here. You're a lady. Yes.
I don't know why this tickled us so.
I want to see him shoving, like, people in the mall out of the way the way they do in the game, you know? Like, moving through crowds.
All he does is just Assassin's Creed walking around doing the dinosaur. This is one of those, like, at first you're...
Look, he's blended in with the crowd. No one can see him.
It's hard to see. He's reading up Assassinating the Pope for Dummies. But
I would so do this. I love it.
He just came out of the bathroom. What was it? Salvador Dali said, "What a pity that so little of what could happen does." And it's moments like these that make me feel like the world is okay. That one guy gets it.
Yeah, he's like, Ezio.
By the way, sorry for stomping on you, Glenn. There was no. It made it look, there was no Glenn Talks on there. So instead it just looked like we're going to thank him as we go to you or something.
Maybe we can fix it in the edit.
It looked like- purposely, you know, like,
stop talking.
He has footage that I don't want anyone to see. We're going to do it.
Sorry, Glenn. Bored now.
Great that Brian jumped in right when I took a breath to speak.
And he's like, and it was on camera, too. So it was like,
I'm sorry, guys.
I'm going to get you later, Brushwood.